welcome, Gordon. Such a pleasure to have you here. I know we've been chatting for months and months on end, and I've been dying to connect with you, and even more so since this incredible journey that you've done to raise funds for mental health and the hike that you have completed with great success. So I can't wait to hear about that. But Gordon, before we start, a little bit about you. Didn't know that you worked in special operations for nuclear submarines. Fascinating. And yeah. Didn't know, married for 34 years. Incredible. What are your hot tips?
I don't know. It just works for me. It's just the way it rolls sometimes, isn't it? I guess I got a left draw. I don't know. I'm just one of those weird guys that started out in life from social housing, not a particularly nice background, environmental, financial, economic. It was in the bad times in the UK in the 70s. I went to a Navy day, decided I wanted to join the Navy and see the world and the cultures and all the people out there. And that's what fascinated me, seeing the whole wide world. And I got to do it. Yeah, with a 20-year career in submarines for the UK Royal Navy, and subsequently then 20 years in the Merchant Navy working in the offshore projects. So I work with critical infrastructure, that was oil and gas, and latterly offshore wind. And those kind of markets, and also environmental programs. I worked and assisted the ocean cleanup on a couple of occasions with their research and development for removal of plastics in the Pacific Ocean. As for being married, you know what? I guess I just found a mad lady like me that could actually tolerate probably being away, what is going to be like 50-60% of our married life being a seafarer. But that's part of the sacrifices that we make as seafarers, and the work that we undertake, whether it's in defense defense of our home nations and those sort of tasks, or in the Merchant Navy and on a global basis supplying what's going to be the renewable energy and the way the future is running for energy and energy security, which geopolitically does affect a greater part of the world right now for terrible reasons that we see on our news every day.
Yes,
and all of that to that sort of security.
Yeah, but, so a very diverse career that you've had, and it sounds like you are quite keen on a purposeful career where you can make an impact that's important to you.
I think that's what it's all about. Everyone has a different walk in life, their own journey. And I came to it at an early stage. Some people, when they're senior or in their latter years of their career, but from my 20s, I realized that I wanted to give back as much as I was taking it, for want of a better word. People use different terms like paying it forward or giving back. And I did that in education to start with, helping my colleagues in the Navy with their education side of things to promote higher education for them, because I was disadvantaged earlier in life. And I felt, now that I've achieved something, maybe I can give back. So I assisted them with that. And it just flowed on from then on. Years and I've become an ambassador for Maritime UK, now an ambassador for the Merchant Navy Welfare Board in the UK, and an informal ambassador for women in maritime as well, because it's terrible, but it's still 2% only of women that are serving in the maritime. It's one of the few disciplines or areas of industry or work where women are not given that fair chance. There's not particularly any equity. And when we talk about well-being, mental health, and that harassment that unfortunately does go on in a lot of industries, can be more severe in the maritime due to the fact that it is isolated. There's less supervision. You don't go home with the weekends. You're stuck on a small ship, small crew in an enclosed area for a lot of the time. So a lot of those interests for me is what I promote for a better maritime, in the hope that we can all be better human beings. And we will have a place, I believe, to play in that. So in my small way, I do it, and I try and encourage others or be inspiring to others that are coming through. The future is our cadets and our early career mariners at the moment. So if I can affect some of them and inspire some of them to, should we say, operate a bit differently or consider others when they go through their life's journey, then I've played my little part, I believe. But yeah, so one of the things you mentioned earlier was about the charity and voluntary work that I do, which is very important to me. So recently I did a Mount Kilimanjaro, which, again, on social media, people say, oh, well done, Gordon, well done. That's inspiring other people. I don't think everyone's going to go out and say, I'm going to go and climb a mountain now just because Gordon did. When I retort and say, look, I'm just a humble seafarer. I just wanted to raise money for some good causes in the Sailor Society, and specifically Safer Waves, which are charities that help seafarers and combat sexual harassment, bullying, and that in the workplace. So fantastic. But yeah, it'll inspire people to think maybe a little bit different about what they do and how they go about their daily life and their career in general. So that's good. Yeah, a lot of money was raised by that. But like I've said across social media, I wish I'd done it at 18 and not 58. I've been a lot of prior training and I'm relatively fit. But altitude sickness is one thing that can get you. And the joints, the impact of the joints. And coming downhill is worse than going up, believe you me.
It is a lot worse. So, Gordon, when and how did your mental health journey begin?
That's an easy question. A really easy question. I served in submarines for nearly 20 years. So apart from working for NASA or being in a prison, in fact, I think you get more luxuries in prison. Being in a tin can under the water for long durations, up to 3 months at a time, obviously in artificial light with no view of the horizon even, and on some of the missions I was, obviously the secrecy involved is you don't even know where you are. And your wife and your family and the sacrifices that they make while you're serving in that sort of context makes for a special kind of idiot or a special kind of person, whichever way you look at it. But people, when the COVID and the pandemic started talking about resilience, like they were all experts and knew about resilience. The resilience of the human mind and how you're interacting with humans, or the lack of interaction with other humans, can only come from those occupations and jobs seriously from a professional level that have done there, been there and done it, if you like, got the t-shirt. Spending months and months on end in a tin can in a submarine is a special, should we say, a unique sort of environment. And that does teach you resilience. And resilience isn't something you can just read in a book and just acquire or just go and buy off the shelf. It's something that's built into your character through training, primarily in a military context. But of course, it's how you're interacting with your fellow colleagues at work. And yes, the office environment or even working at home is going to be slightly different than in a submarine. But having done that for years on end, you build up that resilience to understand, and your body appreciates you don't have any contact with the outside world. You don't have contact with your family. The people around you are the ones that you've got to get on with day in, day out, 24/7, no weekends off or bank holiday. It's what makes you who you are. And that kind of, you know, how they say, spirit de corps or whatever. But that resilience is built in them. So when I came to my first lockdown and something like that, it was a breeze. It was easy for me. Number one, I'm comfortable with myself and my own being and who I am, and I like my own company. A lot of people don't even think about, or I've never thought about that in the context that they might be in a hotel room or a lockdown area for some considerable time. And we're not talking hours, we're talking weeks. That's how it came about, understanding people's mental health and being, because there are tragic areas within seafaring and not least submarines where people don't cope with that very well at all. Of course, they're provided with alternative work or other occupations, so we say. But there is a form of being able to train into that. It is obviously a mindset, and you've got to gear yourself towards that. And I think a lot of it is like when I was writing the corporate documents for those that were coming into lockdown and how to survive it, and what is resilience, and how does this affect negatively or positively our mental health, is to have a routine. It's definitely have a routine, do the things you do normally, add something extra in your day, have fun. Although we don't all believe in the clock and we don't want to be driven by the clock, it's important to have that regulation and timing within it. So have lunch when you normally have lunch, go to bed when you normally have lunch, watch a movie maybe in the evening. Some of it's quite simple tasks, but unfortunately when it came to lockdown, a lot of people just gave up on it and thought, I can sleep whenever I want. I can sleep in the afternoon. Oh, I don't have to get up, or I don't have to deal with the children on these days and so forth. So it was a big upheaval in people's lives. And believe it or not, humans, we're used to habit. We are used to a routine, and we do operate better with that. So it was instilling a bit of that. But yeah, and giving lectures and briefings. I hate the word lectures. Briefings and informal chats are much better than talk about mental health. And what I found, because I was working in Asia at the time of the pandemic and was able to travel there backwards and forwards on my ship, was how our notions from a white Western guy, what I believe mental health being is, to what other cultures may perceive it to be. So yeah, whether it's yin and yang, or the aura, or it's your soul, or it's what's inside you, there's a great many different aspects that are culturally different about how we think about it. And of course, in the sort of European context, we always think about it's in your head, it's in your mind. No, it's your whole aura, who you are as a being. It's to do with your hygiene, even health, happiness, your food, your exercise, how you're treating your body. So it's not just a mind thing. So the mental word and the mental health always gets bad connotations, I think, and usually used in the wrong context as well. But it's the vocabulary we use. So I had an appreciation that other cultures and nationalities didn't necessarily use that culture. So I used interpreters and spoke to the guys individually to understand what their take on it was. And of course, it was a scary time for everyone. especially initially, not knowing how bad it was, how severe, and the families back at home. Yeah. That's the kind of guy I am. You know, yeah, it's paying it forward, is helping others. Yeah, if I can inspire others to consider as they're walking through life to be a better human being. And sometimes it's just the smallest things or the little things you can do to assist that make somebody else's life a whole lot better. And one of those easy ones to do it with is mental health and being. So somebody's got a bad day, but you haven't got a buddy system, or there's two of you out there. You might be a lone worker, for instance. All those aspects come into what we do in the maritime. And maybe we'd like to think a little bit more capable and have the tools to deal with it, but we don't always have that. And of course, as humans, we're each and every one of us is different character, different personality, different physiology, and how our worldview affects how we cope in those sort of situations. Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to be able to assist people.
So then, Gordon, what changes are you noticing around the maritime industry and mental health? Because it's a huge buzzword at the moment. And you might see virtue signaling where companies are promoting mental health and wellbeing, but are actually not implementing it in their own organizations on the floor and talking about it more and being advocates for it, but actually not doing much to help.
I'm going to give you some pros and cons, and we're both here promoting the good in the world, and that's why I will end on a good note. But when you think about it, it took a pandemic before people woke up to mental health and wellbeing, how it affects people. I'm much into suicide prevention as well, and that affects in a terribly high number of mariners and seafarers around the world, which is terrible as well. And a lot of them shifted the gears. And when I say a lot of them, I'm talking about regulatory bodies, governments, the associations, those even NGOs and those that were caring for seafarers realized that they had to change stance. We had to do virtual Zoom or Teams links. There was no face-to-face. How do we adapt? So on the good side, there was a lot of adaptation and a lot of well-meaning people doing good from not just from my own nation, but from a lot of nations. I see that flag states and that a lot of virtues, a lot of let's have a conference on this. Let's go for a luncheon on that. I'm not going to paint it rosy. Some of it was well-meaning. And you can see the earnestness in some of those people that really wanted to try and make a difference, understood that there was a problem. But as the lockdown sort of ended, and for me, it was about 2 years working in Asia because they treated it differently than they did in Europe, for instance, that it all fell by the wayside. So after a lot of these companies and well-meaning people have thrown a few apps around and said, this is how we're going to do it, and we can come online, not realizing that most seafarers didn't even have decent connectivity or Wi-Fi connectivity. In their nice, cushy offices, they thought this was a great thing to do. So yeah, I'm not going to paint it with roses. It's definitely not. And it has, for the better part, all dropped by the wayside. So I think around Europe or the UK merchant navy are better at doing it because we've always had that from the merchant navy welfare board, for example, a whole host of charities that are well-meaning and doing some real good in the maritime for all seafarers of all nationalities, which is fantastic. But some of those have sort of jumped on the bandwagon and thought they had the magic wand and this is, seafarers are going to be great from now on, right? And yeah, it was scary and some outrageous sometimes, some of it, because I think on more than one occasion, even from academia, there was some research that said, oh, it's doing more harm having Wi-Fi and connectivity because they're learning about the pandemic and learning about how the family's affected. That must be awful. Let's not give them Wi-Fi. That's like, yeah, you can sit at home and be in your office and have broadband and instant and continuous connectivity all you like. But for some reason, they were dictating the seafarers that maybe it wasn't a good thing for their mental health or well-being. I think in reality, when they took a check and looked back, they thought, yeah, we all like to know whether it's good news or bad news. We don't like the mushrooms and kept in the dark. Anyways, from a mental health well-being point of view, having information correct, should we say, from some critical analysis and correct information is what's going to do the best. What's doing more harm is people that are not professionally qualified to discuss or topic or throw things out there at industry and expect that for a tough and tightly that they've provided the service. That's it. It's gone away. We've ticked the box. Thank you very much. Move on to the next crisis. But yeah, that's the way out. But globally, things have not particularly got better, but with the advent of better Wi-Fi and connectivity. I won't mention one particular name because it's a brand, obviously, but yeah, that's a game changer for seafarers at sea. And as a seagoing seafarer for 4 decades, I truly understand what having that communication link is. Yeah. So going back to your original question, now I've been remained married for 34 years. some of it probably an issue was because I didn't have any communication and we got on with that flow. But as the decades have rolled on and technology has got better and more widely available, it has and opened up a whole new field of being able to live stream video, see male grandchildren's birthdays when you can't be present yourself. A big impact on mental health and being. It's making a lot more tolerable some of the, shall we say, old school sacrifices that were given you had to when a sat phone was $20 a minute as soon as you picked it up to go and talk to somebody halfway around the world, to the point where on your watch or your phone now, you can have a video call. But like with your own now, it's making it great. And it has lots of other advantages to the seafarer with their mental health and well-being, because from a welfare point of view and training and safety, you can link all those things in there, that they're engaging more with professional development or academia or doing CPD. Once you've got that connectivity to the web, to the outside world, to training institutions, it makes it so much easier. And you're not eating up all your leave time trying to catch up on a radar course or do this course or that course. Yeah.
So what needs to change in terms of what can we do better as a maritime industry in the mental health space?
I did some research for my MBA last year through a university that was very open with the research that you did and wanted it to be real live research from the workplace, from practitioners. And although it was predominantly on training and the future professional mariner, obviously you can't talk about training skills and what's required for the future if you don't obviously talk about mental health and well-being, as well as diversity and equity along the same line. So that research I felt was very important to me. And through that, I did a good angle on the research on mental health, being how it could be better, how we should treat people better. And that research went to those that are dealing with strategy and the future professional mariner within the UK and the wider field, because I made it open to everyone. And it was really good. And I think what we can do better, or what that sort of research found, was that governments and agencies who are dealing with seafarers are not necessarily seafarers themselves. They tend to think that they know what the seafarer would like instead of asking them. So my research was saying, instead of this upper level, higher echelon, siloed thinking, why don't we actually talk to the experienced mariners, those that have been out there and done it, got the t-shirt, lived that life. And some of them might have some old school ways, and with technology and as things move on, we do have to think about how future training and skills and how that affects the mental health and well-being as CEOs goes on. But by the by, these people have been through change themselves, whether it's from sail to steam, from steam to gas turbines and things, different engines, different fuels, the sustainability topic that everyone's talking about and the seafarer's job. And that comes down to the people, because my take on it always is that none of this happens without people, and people are the most important thing. When you talk about AOA or remote and mass and autonomy within shipping, it's still going to take people. It's going to take people to operate the computers, people to actually put the right things in the computer so the right things come out the other end, which is always a given. Some of the autonomy is talking about, well, we're going to be in this control center. It's going to be based on land. So if this control center is nothing more than a shed with no windows and there's a box and there's six people in there got a controller, I'm sure most of them say they would be much more preferable to be on a ship out there in the weather and elements and stuck in this grotty box with no windows. So there's lots of things to think about how it affects people and how they operate within the maritime. And mental health and well-being has obviously got to be a top topic, as with diversity and equity in my mind. That will make it a more fair and more equitable maritime and attract the talent that we need and retain the talent that we need. Because if you're not making it an attractive position or industry to come into, where is the future if all the bright girls and boys are going to work in nuclear power, or they're going to work in retail or marketing to try and convince somebody they should be on a ship and leave their family is one thing. And if it's a remote box somewhere that's, again, alien to them or away from where their family or contacts are, then it's not making it an attractive proposition. So I think those higher building the strategy of the future for the future mariner need to really consider the people first, always, without exception. And I reckon they'll do a lot better if they do that.
Yeah. What I notice within the super yacht industry is the lack of skills around dealing with people. And because they don't have the skills, they tend to let the issues lie for a lot longer than what they should. And then it just erupts and it certainly aggravates the issues. And we've got two comments there We've got, it's such a relief to be connected at sea. And I know sometimes boats restrict crew access in terms of Wi-Fi. Then how can we get land-based companies to understand what seafarers go through? I guess it's hard because they need to experience what it's like before they can truly understand what it's like to work and be at sea on board a vessel. Yeah.
So the easy answer to that would be a lot of the ship owners or those that are renting and chartered and that, and they decide that, well, the seafarers actually don't need that connectivity or restrict it to 2 megabytes a week or something ridiculous like that. The easy answer is to go into their office or their home and pull the plug out and see how they survive 24 hours, let alone a mobilization and a journey to see them back. It's just ridiculous that people even come up with that. And I was very disappointed that some of the academic research was pointing towards that. And again, it was probably meaning, thinking, if you don't know the bad news, it can't affect you. But it's right what you said. We're human thinking beings, and we can think too much into something, or we can get the wrong end of the stick all the time if we're not given correct information and timely correct information.
Yes.
And that's an exact example of what you're saying. I think my generation have been through the non-computer age and the computer age and the smartphone age. We're a lot better at relationships. We're a lot better at diplomacy and understanding cultural differences, shall we say, from that sort of context, like you mentioned, communication. So unfortunately, some of the 20-somethings that haven't had the exposure to dealing with friction, with upsets, it comes down to a bit of maturity, I think. So as you mature and you have a lot more life experiences, shall we say, you're better able to handle it or understand them yourselves and therefore kind of interrelate and communicate with others on that sort of topic. If you haven't had that exposure or your communication has been primarily digital, where you can just click a mouse, press a button, press send, not answer an email if you don't particularly want to and ignore it, that's where the breakdown comes. So I think those of us that pre-email or smartphones had in-depth conversations that had meaning, that had balance, that you understood what your communication was about. And it's not only about transmitting, of course, with active listening. Primarily, it's about listening and finding out what all the information is, grouping it together and making a judgment based on your critical analysis of all those inputs. I think the generation that goes click, mouse, bang, done, have lost a lot of that. And some of the things that are lost in that is because they're not used to things like being courageous or doing the right thing at the right time. Some of it's empathy or lack of. So, yeah, it's easy to say something on a text, click, send, done. No repercussions. The person's not in the room with you. They're not going to do anything. So a lot of those aspects. I'd like to think that as people undoubtedly mature, that they would understand that, especially in the seafaring environment, if there are complications, issues or challenges, they need to be addressed immediately. Not 24 hours, definitely not a week later where it's bubbling over, boiling, underlying ill feeling with people. And I think that's how some of those issues don't get resolved. They fester, if you like, and become far worse than what they originally would be. So,
absolutely.
Right, boys and girls out there, if you're only doubt, talk. It's always good to communicate. But don't forget, that's why we were given only one mouth and 2 ears.
Yes.
Double up on the listening and you'll do well.
Yes. Gordon, before we go, I've got a counseling client in 5 minutes. Before you leave, I've got one more question for you. And we've just got one last comment there. I found recently working with younger crew required a lot of empathy from me as a leader. So, yeah, Gordon, being in a submarine, not knowing where you are for three months at a time?
That's correct, yeah.
What was your biggest learning from that experience?
Like I've mentioned throughout this topic, the biggest learning is learning about yourself.
Yeah.
Looking in the mirror, understanding who you really are as a person, your character, your personality. And from that, you'll understand how you interact with other people. I think, and I keep saying that, I know I've got gray hair. I'm not particularly old school, and I am averse conversing with the modern era and ages that I work with, all different ages and technology, how it advanced and their interpretation of it. But yeah, understanding how you are and how you communicate and how that affects other people. So I think with modern technology, because you don't see those effects, you don't see those faces, if it is through email or WhatsApp or it's just text-based, you lose all that context, all that, the undertones, what's really happening. Whereas with us, with its hands or facial expression, or that we're smiling when we're talking, can tell you so much. Yeah, understanding who you are yourself. And then that leads on to your interaction with other people. So I think from a submarine point of view, it was then, right, I'm happy in myself. I'm happy in my skin. I think I'm a nice person. I've got some rough edges. I can work on that. I'm well-balanced, should we say, psychologically. Whatever level of your education are, you know where you are. You don't particularly have an ego or a chip on your shoulder, which is another thing the military sort of bang out of you. And from that area, then you work then with other people. How do I operate in teams? What do I contribute to the team? So I think a lot of the newer generation are thinking, what can I get from this team? What can I gain from this? Where is my next promotion? And they've only been there 6 months. A lot of it was taught around, you're here, we can't take passengers. We can't afford passengers. There's a mission to be conducted. What are you contributing? And of course, if you're not contributing to something, why are you not? Yeah. Learning about yourself, who you are and who you interact with, but that then can then lead to how you operate in teams, how you operate effectively, how you work towards excellence. And that's whether in training or it's, whether it's the output or whatever job that it is that you do.
I love that.
I see that as the flow of how it should work. A lot of that has gotten rushed in the last decade or so. So going back to grassroots, really, and thinking about who you are, and then think about what you can contribute to the team, not what you can take all the time. Because believe me, giving is always better than taking.
And yeah, I'm really glad you said that, because that affirms that we're doing the right thing in our advanced leadership course, because we focus on self-leadership first, and then we dive into the other subjects. But you cannot be an effective leader if you don't hold up the mirror and look at yourself first.
That's a big one with me, always a big one. And I read the David Goggins book. He was a Navy SEAL and he's written one. And one of his first comments within about page three was he looked in the mirror. So the first sort of chapters go into, he had a dysfunctional childhood and life, and how he became a Navy SEAL and an ultra marathon runner and things like that. I think the guy's been on YouTube and done lots of visual stuff, but I just read the book. I never knew the guy before. And he was very much of the same mindset that I have. It's pulling yourself out of a hole, doing something that makes your life better, but in the process, doing a lot for other people along the way. And his take on it was every morning he looked in the mirror, really looked in the mirror, and understood who he was to start with. And that gave him the start for the day.
Fantastic. Great. Thanks, Gordon, for your time. I've got to run. Lovely chatting.
Oh, I'm pretty excited. You can invite me back anytime. There's so much to say, so much to get. And between us anyway, with you working on the leadership side and what I do for seafarers when I'm offshore on my ships, because I am a seagoer, hopefully we can inspire other people to make it a better maritime. That's what we're all aiming for. Be kinder, better people.
For sure. Thank you so much, Gordon.